This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
We will now transition to our next speaker, Season Goodpasture, who is the founder and executive director of Acorns to Oak Trees. Tribal communities in California are deeply underserved, and this year I hope to start a conversation about how we might do better to ensure that Native people have access to the services that we provide and that our services are better adapted to meet the needs of tribal communities. And to help educate us and start that conversation, I'm delighted to introduce Season Goodpasture, the executive director. Thank you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today. Really excited to learn from everybody, and that was a great presentation right before me. So my name is Season Goodpasture. I'm Mighty Wind Paiute, and I'm a member of the Susanville Indian Rancheria up in Northern California. And my husband and our four kiddos are members of the Paula Bennett Mission Indians here in Southern California. If you want to go to the next slide. So just a little bit, I have no disclosures, so nothing to disclose. Next slide. Brief history about Acorns to Oak Trees. About 4 years ago now, this whole organization really got started out of passion and necessity. Our oldest daughter, Harley, is on the spectrum. She's 7 years old now. And prior to Acorns to Oak Trees, I was the ICWA director for the Paula Bennett Mission Indians for about 10 years. And I have my background in mental health. I'm a MS in counseling psychology, and obviously a huge background in child welfare as their ICWA director. So it came to me as a surprise that it really, the idea of resources and the tremendous need for people with disabilities within the tribal community really escaped me. And it took having a child with a disability to really open my eyes to the tremendous need that exists within our population and how many of these children really go undetected, undiagnosed, underdiagnosed, and really how it's that early detection piece that leads to very poor outcomes later on for our children. And I started to kind of put those pieces together. So after we had Harley, you know, because of my background, I was pretty sure that autism was going to be the diagnosis for her. And I, prior to that, I had no knowledge of what a regional center was, which was really concerning given my master's degree and given the role that I had as a social worker. I'd worked a lot with different state agencies. And so, again, just very surprising that I did not have this knowledge. So I had reached out to the Department of Developmental Services about 4 or 5 years ago now. And I explained who I was. I explained what I did, my role within the tribal community. And I told them about our daughter, Harley, and how, you know, I just happened to kind of like find out about the regional center through the course of her getting physical therapy. And I said, you know, if somebody like me with my level of education, my career choice, and who I work with on a day-to-day level at the state, if I don't know who a regional center was, I guarantee that a lot of our other families have no idea what a regional center is. And that discussion led to the legislation being passed, which is the Tribal Early Starter Outreach Initiative, which really prioritized relationship building between regional centers and tribal communities. So much, and I really, you know, take my hat off to DDS, because I went to them with, hey, you know, there's this huge problem. I met with Director Bargeman at the time and Chief Equity Officer at the time, Leilani Walters. And within a matter of months, you know, they really pioneered this huge piece of legislation, did carve out funding, you know, to create this whole outreach initiative. And I've just been able to be kind of along for the ride. And so that's really what started this organization, was like, okay, I get to be part of this now. And so Acorns to Oak Trees is the first tribal organization to be vended in the United States to provide pediatric therapy. So we're now vended with 5 regional centers across California, and we travel statewide, which I'll share a little bit more about here in a minute, doing these outreach events where we're really focusing on one of the main service access inequity barriers that exist for tribal communities, and that really is getting services to the community. You know, we know how great of a program Early Start is, right? But even the best program, if it's not accessible to certain populations and demographics, then it's, you know, it might as well not even exist. And that's kind of what we've seen. And so we've just kind of been on the ride of our lives doing these outreach events now. We're going on our second year of having the clinical part of it, where we provide free developmental assessments to tribal communities. And it's really been amazing to see just the impact that those events have had and the changes that we're seeing as a result. Next slide. Let's see, go ahead and go to the next slide. So as I was preparing for this, I know that a lot of people may not be super familiar just with tribal history. I'm just going to focus on California's history. So there are 109 federally recognized tribes throughout California. There are a number of other tribes in California that may not have that federal designation, but there are 109, and there are 18 federally recognized tribes in San Diego, where our principal office is located, in particular in San Diego and Imperial counties. And most of our tribes, as I mentioned, that lead to that whole service access and equity barrier, most of those tribes are extremely rural. One of our very first outreach events that we did was actually in Cachon. We spent a tremendous amount of time, us and San Diego Regional Center, in trying to build relationships. Even me, as a Native American tribal member, I still had a hard time connecting with this tribe and getting them to kind of open up their doors. The discussions around autism and IDD is still very new to most tribal communities, and it's not something that is still openly discussed. And we're really trying to make a big difference in that regard through our Harley's Hope project, which is my husband and I's storytelling video about our experience, just coming to terms with our daughter's diagnosis and kind of identifying and accessing resources through that, and just kind of everything that we went through. And that has really helped to bridge some of that barrier in approaching that subject. Next slide. So it's really important. I know we have a number of different participants from different sectors on this, and I get asked this a lot, like, you know, like what can we do? And it's really important, I think, just everybody sees the disparities and wants to help. But sometimes it's hard unless you really understand the history of tribal people. Because once you know the history of tribal people, you'll understand what historical trauma is. And really, historical trauma, as we define it, really comes from that forced removal and land dispossession that happened. And a lot of our, throughout that process, a lot of our Native American children were forcibly removed from their homes, placed in boarding schools, and a lot of them died all throughout the United States. And they received harsh forms of punishment for speaking their native tongue. My grandma was one of those boarding school children who was removed from her mom at the age of 5. She only spoke Maidu at the time, and she was sent down south on a train by herself to the Sherman Indian School here in Riverside County. She was not returned until she was 12 years old. By that time, she lost her native tongue. She could no longer effectively communicate with her family. And really what that did, that created a huge kind of identity crisis, right? She didn't fully fit in with her Western peers, but she also at that point really felt like she didn't fit in with her tribal side as well. And obviously that huge communication barrier. And so we've seen from a number of studies the long-lasting trickle-down effect of that experience. And so, you know, through those things, we're able to kind of contribute higher ACE scores amongst our children to those events, higher rates of substance abuse, suicide, mental health, you name it. Those are all things that we can kind of crosswalk and see how it correlates to higher rates of IDD amongst our population. And so we did this video about 2 years ago that really focused on kind of highlighting the reason why it's so important for organizations like Acorns to exist to help to bridge that barrier. Because even if you have the most well-meaning people who are wanting to make a difference and reach our population, it still is very difficult because of that deep-seated mistrust, you know, between the Western medicine world and also the education system, right? A lot of our families, you know, within our lifetime, we knew somebody who had been to a boarding school. And so these main systems of care that are responsible for IDA, rolling out IDA, you know, those are not seen necessarily as safe amongst our people still. So we do a lot of work in that space. But if you click on the hyperlink, it should go to the video. I don't think we hear the sound.
Having worked in Indian country and growing up on the reservation, I'm well aware that access to resources and services is scarce, you know, because so many of our reservations are so remote. But it was eye-opening hearing from some of the families talk about just the degree to which they felt uncomfortable accessing resources and services off the reservation. So the fact that CDC is reporting the number of Native American children that have IDD, intellectual and developmental disabilities, is so high is astonishing that not more is being said about it. There's a huge epidemic that is not being discussed.
We have a lot of children that struggle. I have a nephew with special needs. He's now a grown man. But I watched my sister struggle with getting him services through the normal channels where we are used to getting healthcare services through our tribal organizations. She was unable to do that.
Being the parent of a child with cerebral palsy, it's actually been hard for many reasons. There definitely was trouble finding services in Amador County. I spent 3 hours a day on the road to get the care I needed for him. I went to a bunch of different health, you know, Native health organizations out here and was just told from the gate that we don't have therapy out here for that. We don't have, you know, facilities like that.
So she ended up having to live in the Sacramento region rather than where my tribe and my family is located to ensure that he got services. Some parents have shared with me that they've had a difficult time facing the possibility that their child has autism out of fear of the unknown, fear of what that might mean. You don't have to be in isolation. We can talk about this. We can be together and help one another. I actually think that's just as important as the services that the children get is supporting the families generally and supporting the parents generally. In fact, George and his son were part of the reason why I agreed to be a board member for Acorns, because I was watching him struggle.
We don't live on the reservation. We live in town. Okay. And but our towns are all small, you know. There's not that much help up here in the rural areas, you know.
This is my first time with a child with hydrocephalus and all these issues. So I, you know, I'm learning as we go. It's just a lot of worry because he does have vision problems and he doesn't talk yet. He still does his baby talk. He's still working on holding his head up. He's 2 years old, but he's still like at a 3 to 4 month old level. With him, his first year and a half of life, he missed out on crucial physical therapy because we didn't have that, you know, another person to go to.
It's not just about the lack of services in our communities, though. It's about the lack of culturally appropriate services in our communities. Tribes and tribal people simply look at things differently. We have different ways of raising our children. We have different ways of talking about challenges that they face.
Because we've been through so much in the Native community, a lot of us don't trust just regular doctor's offices, which is why we use Indian health services, because they can understand. I don't just want to trust the Native doctor. I want to trust the whole system.
It comes from the struggles that Native people have had to deal with in this country for hundreds of years. It comes from racism. It comes from misunderstanding who we are. Little expectation that tribal children are worth the effort. Couple that with the fact that they've got parents who are probably just barely making ends meet. And I think it's really important for an organization like Acorns to Oak Trees to exist, not only to fill a void where there are no services at all to help tribal families find services, but to ensure that those services that are provided are culturally appropriate.
Acorns to Oak Trees is a village of support for tribal communities, tribal families to have information, resources, and services to help their children who have intellectual and developmental disabilities or delays. And we work to build relationships between regional centers and the state agencies and school districts that work with our families on a day-to-day basis. My husband and I have a 5.5-acre ranch in Paula on the reservation, and that is where Acorns to Oak Trees opened their first clinic. We offer occupational therapy, which is really exciting. That's a huge need within our communities. We also have an early interventionist who can provide ABA and the early start services there. And we also will be starting to provide speech in June. This year we got our grant that's taking us statewide with our education and outreach arm. So we created the first ever Native American Community Navigator program that's gonna provide technical assistance to families accessing regional center resources, requesting an IEP through their school district, and you know, helping to advocate for those families. So that's huge. We have a tribal home visiting grant, and we're able to provide some of those early childhood education services and prenatal services to mom about how to promote a healthy pregnancy and things like that. And then from there, you know, we hope to expand our clinical services because, again, hearing what we've heard from families, they want culturally sensitive, culturally tailored programming. There is still a lot of work ahead to help Acorns to Oak Trees grow and expand services throughout the state.
Then we're creating something that needs to be created.
There's so many different ways that people can help our organization grow. It can be inviting us out to do an outreach event for your tribe, which we love to do because, you know, sharing our first video, Harley's Hook Project, and about our journey really does make a difference in helping to reduce some of that stigma and the barriers that families face.
And if people can pass the word to their friends, you know, what a better cause to do.
I'm so glad that we are creating this opportunity for all of us to connect because it's so healing, and that's, I love hearing that. Other moms, other dads say, like, I'm so glad to know that I'm not the only one.
Oh, I hope they get a facility on every single Native reservation that needs it, and I hope that these tribal leaders really start working with them and really start understanding that we are in a severe epidemic, and this is way more severe than anybody could even imagine.
What Acorns to Oak Trees is doing for tribal children is actually good for the community as a whole. Children aren't just members of their tribal community, they're members of the community generally. And I think it benefits everybody to ensure that all children and get the services that they need.
If I see a need and I can help, then I'm gonna do it. And that is my takeaway from, you know, everything that we've gone through with Harley.
For us as a family and to, you know, bring it to other people, you know, give it to other people. I mean, Harley's touching so many people's lives, and she doesn't want anything for it. You know, she's every day she's just giving her gift.
Harley has taught me to not take anything for granted. The gift that she has given me is the outlook on, you know, what's a meaningful life? You know, what we have created because of her and for other children like her is going to be something that outlives all of us.
So that video we did from funding through State Council of Developmental Disabilities. It's agencies like that that really help us reach our communities in ways that really are meaningful to us. So storytelling is very traditional amongst our tribal population. And I can't even tell you, so I'm not showing the one main video that we show at Harley's Hope Project because I wanted to be sensitive to the time that I have and make sure that there's time for Q&A, but the video really does a beautiful job at sharing just very real experiences. My husband and I came from two very different backgrounds educationally. You know, he was somebody that it took Harley ending up in the hospital with back-to-back colds and him kind of seeing like and hearing the questions from the doctors and kind of seeing how everything played out, like, okay, maybe this is not, you know, this is, there is something here, you know, and we talk about just, you know, sometimes that can create a real strain in the family, you know, between mom and dad or caregivers, you know, and so it's really important. And I said it in the video, we don't want anybody to have to go this journey alone. And I think it's really powerful if you have people from your own community just making it a safer thing to talk about. And I think that's what our videos do. It sparks conversation. It raises awareness about this issue. And it really has been truly impactful to the work that we do. Go ahead and next slide. So some of the things that I had touched on just in terms of those equity barriers, you know, a lot of that. So one of the things that the state looked at when I had that initial conversation with them, they went back, they shared, and they said, we immediately pulled their purchase of service data, meaning the number of people that are actually accessing regional center services, because they wanted to see if what I was saying was showing in the data, right? And we made up less than 0.5%. Native Americans made up 0.38% of all the consumers in California that were actually getting services. So that's like pretty outrageous, given that we have the highest rates of IDD out of any other ethnicity in the nation to be that underserved. And say, so they knew that a lot of, and that's what Dr. Barshman says in another video that we have, was she said it really pointed to something systemic. And so the work that we do, you know, is very, we're the first organization of its kind doing this kind of work where we're traveling statewide. We have this huge motorhome that we take out to events because as I had mentioned, some of these tribes, you know, they have very limited resources and capacity to serve their members and electricity, things like that. Like some of those basic needs are just not guaranteed things that these communities have. So when we travel, like we try to bring pretty much anything that we could possibly need. We had to invest in satellite internet because, you know, we don't have consistent Wi-Fi. So anytime we go into these events, like we pretty much bring enough stuff so we are self-contained. And every outreach event that we've done has been so unique. You know, every time we go, we end up with these kind of like, you know, heart-wrenching stories where we are doing these assessments and we have kids, you know, who are 10 years old that have never had an IEP, they can't read or write, significant delays, and they just, you know, for one reason or another, they've been missed, or they just, there's a huge disconnect there. And so we're able to give really meaningful services in a way that probably would not have reached these families had we not gone through that length. So, and I think, you know, part of going back to the importance of early detection, you know, and just highlighting the need for improved early detection with our populations, you know, so many of these kids that we encounter, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them are school aged, where they still have never had, you know, they clearly should have qualified for Early Start. Many of the families have no idea what a regional center is. So we're providing such basic information. And now this is like everything that I eat and breathe all day long. And so sometimes it's even, I have to remind myself when we go out to these events now, like they're hearing about what a regional center is for the very first time. Having an open conversation about autism for the very first time. And so a lot of what we do really requires a tremendous amount of just time and resources to support these families that a lot of the times have people within their family that have complex needs, but also complex traumas. And I think that is also a really unique thing about our organization, because we have a whole team of folks who have such a strong background in all the areas that you could possibly need to support these families. But it truly is, it's what makes a difference, and it really is what is needed to move the needle with our people. Next slide. So I kind of talked about a little bit of this. So if you look at the Child Find Law, it actually does specifically talk about tribes and gives this directive for LEAs to engage with tribes. But, you know, in the conversations that I've had, that really did not take place or hardly took place prior to a lot of the work that we've done. And I think part of it is just not having the ability to know how to effectively engage with tribes, reach with tribes, and also just that deep-seated mistrust, how I mentioned. Next slide. So the work that we do really, so it's kind of cool. So as I'd mentioned, a lot of the times when we do these outreach events, we actually partner with those regional centers across the state. So we're inviting regional centers. They're there. We invite, you know, the tribes and all their programming there. Pretty much anybody that is within the community that provides services to families or early childhood education. And what we do, it creates a nice place for everybody to kind of start building relationships, which is really key to any of this, because although we're vendored in five different regional center catchment areas, we still don't provide all of our programming. So a lot of the times it does require us to kind of hand off the families. And the only way that we're able to effectively do that is if we start to build that relationship. And so that's really what these outreach events also help to facilitate. And so I can really think of, you know, some of our key events where, you know, the regional centers for the first time or have, you know, the very first time they're driving out to these reservations and they're seeing and their minds are just blown of like, wow, like there's so much that needs to be done here. And, you know, and I'm proud to say that a lot of those relationships are continuing on even after that first outreach event, from what I've been told. And now we're in year two. And so we're revisiting some of those areas that we went to in year one, again in year two. We actually just did one in Sonoma County at Sonoma County Indian Health Project. And that was our second one that we did in partnership with North Bay, and North Bay has been phenomenal and partnering with us. Same with Far Northern Regional Center. They're contracting with us to do intake clinics up in Lassen County, which is my hometown. Same thing with San Diego Regional Center. They're there at all of our outreach events, and they've all just been truly amazing partners to help make a difference. But them showing up really does speak volumes to the tribal communities and helping to create some lasting, like meaningful relationships, which is really what has been lacking, but very, very needed. Again, just providing parent and provider education has been huge. We go and provide a bunch of information, just even basic information in terms of what the developmental milestones are. Another neat project that we did, if you look us up in the App Store, we created our own culturally tailored developmental milestone tracker app, and it's mirrored off the CDC's developmental milestone. I was a tribal CDC Learn the Sign Act Early Ambassador last year, and I loved their app that they created. I'm like, now we just need to indigenize it. And so that's what we did. And it's really cool because it charts your child's progress. And then if it detects that there's a delay, it immediately connects you with a regional center based off of the zip code that you entered, which is pretty cool. Next slide. Just some tips. I know I'm getting close to that mark, so I want to be mindful, but just some tips on how different pediatricians, parents, schools, and agencies can help improve the service access and equity barriers for our community. So pediatricians, just being culturally responsive as much as possible, understanding that historical trauma piece, and just understanding that your parents that come into your office may not know what those developmental milestones are, spending a little bit more time, you know, explaining with them what they are, and also just making more referrals. A lot of the times our kids, you know, in California, you only have to have a 25% delay to qualify for Early Start. And honestly, the majority of the kiddos that we see at these events, they all qualify for these services. So I think, you know, just improving that referral rate. We're really helping to parents to self-advocate and know what their rights are and the systems. Same thing for schools. So working with systems within the schools to provide our services, I think, has been really helpful, because maybe they weren't accessible before because of the different areas that they're located in, or they just didn't have a good rapport with the families. And then, as I mentioned, partnering with the different state agencies, you know, that we've done has really been a game changer in terms of just improving the relationship with state agencies and tribal communities and the funding that's being set aside to help improve some of these areas that we've discussed. I think that's it. And if you go to one last slide, then it's all of my contact information.
Thank you so very much. We have some questions for you, if you're willing.
Yeah.
Could you speak to what providers can do to provide culturally appropriate services? You talked about some of our developmental screening had to be adapted. So I think one question is, how do we improve our skills and to understand what will work for the tribal communities?
I think just kind of understanding the hesitation that parents may have in just being forthcoming with information. I was on this big panel for American Pediatrics Academy. They were working on something to improve that whole relationship between pediatricians and parents. And one of the suggestions that I gave was just offering the information without requiring them to say something to trigger you making that referral. You know, I think too, even though I had that knowledge of, you know, child development, Harley had a number of, I think, signs, you know, that should have led the pediatrician to make that referral to the regional center. And one of the things that I had said was, well, maybe if she knew that the higher rates, right, of IDD amongst Native Americans, like for me, if I was a pediatrician and I knew that I was treating a Native American child and they are predisposed to certain things, or, you know, that we know that they have significantly higher rates in a certain area, my mind is going to go towards, okay, I'm going to err on the side of caution and I'm just going to refer this parent to the regional center. And if they qualify, amazing, you know, that's what we're looking for. But if they don't qualify, that's great too. Then they're on track. But just making sure that we're connecting parents, not requiring them to, you know, give us things that they may worry about how they could be perceived, if that makes sense. So sometimes they're worried about being, you know, red flagged in the system. Oh, my kid's not talking and walking. You're going to look at me possibly as the reason why, because I'm a bad parent or I'm not, you know, doing X, Y, or Z. And so we want to remove as much stigma and shame and anything that could be associated and just connect them with help and resources. And culturally tailored, programs, pamphlets, milestone booklets, things like that. Our agency can share those things. And that makes a big difference. When they see themselves represented in those materials, they're more likely to access them.
For sure. Do you think that there is a role for mobile services? You talked about when people show up, then that means something, but also to show up on a space that's not yours, you know, you kind of need an invitation or a guide or so is your organization something that if we say, look, you know, I'm a clinician, I have these skills, I'm willing to go to where you need me to go and provide a talk or provide a service or do whatever. Is that something that would be helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really what happens. You know, anytime I present on this topic and share our story and kind of what we do, I end up having people in the audience that are speech and language pathologists, occupational therapists, psychiatrists, you name it, that like really kind of get excited about this opportunity to really like go where they're needed the most. And our families are so, so grateful. So it's like, you can't help but just be extremely like passionate, excited, and just love being able to make such a big difference. So I welcome anybody that wants to join us in our journey. And I usually try to set as much funding aside, you know, because I know, time is money. But we really appreciate anybody that's willing to join our village movement and bring the services to the people.
This is John Takayama. I think there's a question about which regional centers that you work with. And I think the bigger question is, because regional centers, each regional center is independent and different from other regional centers, do you already have pre-existing relationships, and I guess outreach is the way to get regional centers to be more involved with tribal nations?
Yeah, so DDS has been a great partner in really helping to facilitate relationships between myself, my organization, and the executive directors for the various regional centers. I've been able to present to them directly. So a lot of them will know my name or Acorns to Oak Trees. And a lot of them have tribes within their tribal their catchment area. And, you know, Native Americans are part of that underserved. So we kind of help them. It's a very mutually beneficial relationship. And I think that they see when we go, we make their job easier. And that's, I always tell them, like, I will help me help you. We help them get those kiddos. It helps their numbers. And more than anything, it's a good thing to do, right? Goodwill.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. One other minor question that I had was, are tribes using sort of the telehealth type methods, or is internet access so difficult that's not an option?
I think some tribes do use telehealth because that's the only way that they will get services. But yes, I would say that, you know, the state has even recognized just the huge barrier that exists for tribal communities to access that. So I know there's a huge broadband initiative that's going on right now to help address some of that. But yeah, these are very real barriers that exist. So yeah.
Do most of these families have Medi-Cal?
The majority of them do have Medi-Cal, yes.
Okay, and are they getting their IHHS?
So a lot of them don't know about IHSS. So that's like a whole nother conversation that we end up having with them, and that the parent navigators help them access those as well.
Yeah, because they could be getting paid for providing care to their own kids. Yeah, I'm sure that would help.
Yes. Absolutely.
There's one other question. Are there studies that have looked into why the incidence of DD is higher in the Native American communities Is it epigenetic in origin due to historical trauma or related to risk factors like social determinants of health and pregnancy or both?
I think it's all of those. You know, from my research, it's really that biopsychosocial. There's like a little bit of, you know, layering upon layering of things. And I think that there's a strong case, which there needs to just be more research on this topic. I think that we would learn so much if we did a specific research study on prevalency, you know, autism prevalency rates amongst Native American populations. But the reason why you're not going to find that is because it's a very touchy subject. So I think I'm not a data geek, but I really value all of that information and really what it leads to. So even though that's not my strong suit, I look at that area now and think like, wow, like we could probably have an amazing research study that would be very, very insightful to a lot of these questions that we have, because this is pretty much all who we work with. So.
Thank you so much for starting this important conversation. I think it gives us some marching orders and some ideas about how to move forward and reach out and do a better job than we've been doing. So I really appreciate your work. I really appreciate your outreach to us, as well as to the people in this conference and to healthcare providers to help us do the work that clearly we haven't been doing our jobs as well as we could, and we need to step it up, and you're helping us to understand how. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.